Is it going? Is it going? Is it going? Is it going? I don't know. You're looking for.
I challenge you now to raise the bar. I challenge you right here on the WWE Network on the Stone Cold Podcast. Push the envelope. Go out on a limb. Be edgier. Take more chances. Amp up and amplify everything you've got. You've rested on your laurels. You're a little bit comfortable. Give it to me. Give it to me. Give it to me. Is this a disconnect? Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 456 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, August 14, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. We are 1 week away from our SummerSlam meetup. SummerSlam is next Sunday at the Barclays Center here in Brooklyn. And we are having our meetup at 2 p.m. in the afternoon at the KBH Beer Hall, which is only a few blocks away. If you have not already done so, please RSVP. It is not a requirement, but trying to get some semblance of a headcount here. It is a joint event that is being brought to you both by not only the Sound Off, but by Mania Crawl. You can sign up on maniacrawl.com as well. We're going to have Bill Apter as our special guest. He'll be signing books. He'll have copies of his book to purchase, to sign. He'll be taking pictures. I'm actually scheduled to interview Bill on Tuesday night, so that'll be something to watch for on our YouTube channel, just FYI. But yeah, looking forward to seeing everybody at the meetup. And again, you can find the event invite with the address and all the details. It's on our Facebook page. It's specifically the Facebook fan page, although I will share links on Twitter and Facebook as the week goes on. So look forward to seeing everybody there. And you may also notice that this is episode 456. 455 was my 90-minute interview with Bob Holly, which went up first on YouTube. Later, I pushed it out to the feed, which goes out across all platforms. It's been getting a great response. I really appreciate that. Bob does too. I know that. Best thing to do is to tweet him. He's not on Facebook or Instagram or any of that stuff. He's on Twitter, at TheBobHolly. And let him know what you think. You know, he answers everybody back. That's one of the cool things also that Bob does, is every single person who tweets him, it may not be right away, but he does answer you back. And, you know, I heard from DDP's team this past week. Apparently, they've been getting a tremendous response to the interview I did with him a couple of weeks ago, even still. So I love hearing stuff like that, and let's try to do the same for Bob. I also posted a new Sound Off Gamer on YouTube, trying to keep up here with all this new content that I'm pushing out. It's been a couple of weeks since I got one of those up, so there's a brand new gamer on there if you're into that. I'm still searching for my first win in WWE 2K16, and in this latest video, I am aiming to get my first win using Pentagon Jr. I have had to go to the temple at Lucha Underground to find somebody who can help me win, or try to help me win, and Pentagon is going to take on Randy Orton in a TLC match. And, well, you can watch it for yourself, but without giving away any spoilers here, I will say I am aiming to get my first win in 2K16 at some point before 2K17 comes out. So, fingers crossed, that is my goal. I guess we'll see what happens there. Audible. You know, I did the interview with Bob Holly this past week, and one of the things we talked about was his book, The Hardcore Truth, which has been out for a few years now, and I did a 45-minute review on this book in, like, 2013. It's still up if you go back in our old YouTube videos on the channel. And it's a great book. It may be, if it's not the best, it's one of the best wrestling books I've ever read. I really enjoyed, you know, Mick Foley's first book. All of Chris Jericho's books are awesome. Bret Hart's book, I still haven't broken into that, or Daniel Bryan. But this is one of the better ones, and one of the more honest reads. It comes across as just being honest. He doesn't hide his own flaws and faults, and he tries to put the, you know, some of the urban myths to bed about some of the stories that have been told about him, and he did the same thing in the interview that we did. But the point the reason I bring this up is, His book is available on Audible. And it's not narrated by Bob, just be aware of that. But if you want to get the audiobook version of The Hardcore Truth, I can't think of a better book to sign up for, because when you use our link, you get one free book you get to cash in on. So even in the 30-day trial period where you don't get billed, you get one free book. And if you cancel that trial, you get to keep that book no matter what. And The Hardcore Truth is as good a book to pick as any. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster, that's our link. Especially coming off the interview I just did with him, I know there's a lot of interest in the book, and people said they're going to buy it. That's great. If you want to buy it, by all means, support Bob in any way possible. But if you want the audiobook version, you can get it for free using our link. So that's audibletrial.com/Solomonster. I also want to take a moment here to give a shout-out and thank all of our PayPal VIPs, those who donate to the show on a weekly basis. If you would like to become a PayPal VIP, all you got to do is make a donation of $10 or more. Get yourself a shout-out and a wrestling nickname, which, by the way, if it hasn't already been taken, you can suggest a wrestling nickname when you make the donation. There should be some sort of like a note box if you want to write one in. Or if you just want me to do it, that's fine too. But I want to give a shout-out to everybody who made a donation to the show this week. Thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, who I know has turned into a big star on our in our Facebook group, as has Deadpool James Herrera, who actually just joined our Facebook group. He thought he was part of it all along. Apparently not. James Hollywood Henderson, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, The Chosen Son Andre Smith, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, Timu the Tyrant Asakainen, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, Juan Berriamal Bermudez, kind of a big deal, Corey Blake, High Society Thurman Taylor IV, The Bakersfield Brawler, Kevin Velado, The Terror from Taipei, Milan Parmar, Grady the California Cruiser Clements, Masculine Michelangelo Corletto, The Missouri Mauler, Gerald Miller, The St. Louis Slasher, Matthew King, and Vicious Vincent Cooper. Thank you to all of our PayPal VIPs for your support of this podcast. Got a lot of stories here to get to before we even talk about Raw and SmackDown. May as well start with this one. WWE released Joey Styles. Ryan Satin broke the story on Pro Wrestling Sheet. It looks like it may have happened 2 weeks ago, shortly after he did. Joey did one of those Facebook Live Q&As. I've been seeing all the NXT guys and some of the WWE guys doing these. And Joey did one in Titan Tower. Kathy Kelly hosted, and Joey was answering questions. His last tweet was from July 29th. He has not posted anything since. He was their VP of Digital Media, I believe that was his title, for many, many years. He worked for WWE.com. I guess you could say he ran WWE.com. I'm not even sure if that's completely accurate, but obviously he played a very big role there. I saw part of the Facebook interview. I didn't watch the entire thing. I read the transcript. I watched a good part of it. But I watched the part of the Facebook interview where he answered a fan-submitted question, and I think it's important to mention that these are fan-submitted questions. And Kathy Kelly, she was afraid to even read the question out loud. She was kind of laughing, oh, I don't know if I should. So Joey decided to go ahead and read it. He even joked, hey, you know, this might be what gets me fired. And he read a question about why WWE insists on shoving Roman Reigns down people's throats. And Joey gave what I thought was a very diplomatic answer, which is that that's what the chairman of the company wants. You know, he's been right way more times than he's been wrong, according to Joey. And if he sees money in Roman Reigns as a babyface, then a babyface is what he will be. Now, he did mention, I guess, later on in the interview sometimes, or as part of that question, but later on he said some of the best babyfaces first had to go heel in order to get there. You know, but that was it. That was pretty much on that question, at least, the extent of what he said. Now, I did read he also talked about hating three-man commentary boots, so he and I are on the same page. And I love it, too, because there's been some talk. Look, I'm a baseball fan, And I'll tell you right now, my favorite announced team in sports, period, is the New York Mets team. And it happens to be a three-man booth. Gary Cohen, Ron Darling, and Keith Hernandez. I think they're fucking awesome. But Joey made a great point. He actually explained in football why a three-man booth works. In baseball, why a three-man booth works. And why it doesn't work in pro wrestling. It does not work in WWE because it's just the action, the segments, they're just moving so much quicker than a baseball game would or a football game would. And he's right. Now, again, it just is a matter of personal preference. I just don't like the three-man booths that they have set up. You know, if you put together a three-man booth of, I don't know, freaking Jim Ross and Mauro Ranallo and Corey Graves, you know, they may be awesome. So I think part of it is just I don't like the teams they have. But I just don't think they're necessary. And I was glad to read Joey, you know, talking about that and explaining why it works, you know, in one sport and it doesn't work in wrestling. And I think he's absolutely right. The other thing he mentioned was he doesn't like the universal title name. And to that I say, big deal. You know, I mean, if that's what got him in trouble, who cares? So did Daniel Bryan, you know, on their own TV. Now they're turning it into an angle because they pointed it out again on Raw. You know, Mick Foley was very upset about Daniel Bryan making fun of the whole idea of a universal title. And I mean, they replayed the freaking thing on Monday night. It was from that Talking Smack show. And Bryan was, you know, he was openly mocking it. He was saying, you know, well, you're not going to see a Galaxy title on SmackDown or a Milky Way title or however he phrased it. So, I mean, the point is, if the Facebook thing is what got him fired, I think it's just completely ridiculous. This will go down as one of the more ridiculous releases they've ever handed out. If it was just the video, I have to think that there was something else going on here. We just haven't heard. We don't know what it is. Because, to me, this is just, and again, not that WWE hasn't done petty things before, but it just is so ridiculous to me. And he worked for that company for so many years, and .com seems to be doing pretty well. Maybe he was underperforming. Maybe there's something we don't know about behind the scenes with the numbers. And he just, you know, I don't know. But if it was the video, and look, they took that video down about 24 hours after it went up. They took that shit down fast. So, what did that tell you? Apparently somebody in the hierarchy there in WWE felt that this guy had to go. And if it was because of the video, I just think it's really dumb. And the Joey Styles story actually dovetails nicely into something else I want to talk about for a few minutes here, which is Dean Ambrose on the Stone Cold podcast. Not the best interview Austin's done. Probably, though, the most fascinating to watch and easily the most awkward of all the interviews that he's done. And it was mostly on Ambrose, not Austin, because I like Austin's interviews for the most part. It drives me a little nuts when he kind of talks over people, but it was very obvious early on, you know, where Austin kept prodding him about his upbringing, that Ambrose just didn't want to talk about it. You know, he just didn't want to go there. He was not cooperating. Austin kept bringing up what, you know, I assume he read on his Wikipedia page, which is that he grew up in public housing, and it was very apparent that Ambrose just did not want to talk about it. And Austin mentioned him working in a gym at one point. And it was weird because Ambrose was all like, who told you that? Almost like it's not true. Like, who told you that? Where are you getting your information from? But then, like, in the next sentence, he admitted that he did, in fact, work once upon a time in a gym. It's like Ambrose was very closed off. There was just no depth to the guy. I came away from this, you know, I like Dean Ambrose. He just seemed here like a very laid-back, chill, like, everyman kind of thing. The way he speaks, the way he talks, he reminds me of a lot of kids I went to college with. Just, you know, he's just a guy. But there just seemed to be no depth. Austin kept trying to get stuff out of him so we can learn more about him, and there was just, like, a wall. And just completely closed off. Some other things that stood out to me. The comments that Ambrose made about his match at WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar, which I thought was just a huge disappointment. The match, not what he said here. Although it was actually disappointing what he said here. He clearly feels the same way about that match. He said he went to the ring pissed off that night because all the ideas that he was pitching, he had all of these ideas for what he wanted to do in this match. This was his first I believe his first singles match was WrestleMania 31. What was he doing last year? I don't remember, actually. I can't remember what Dean Ambrose did at WrestleMania 30. That's pretty bad. Was he in a singles match last year? I feel like maybe he was. I don't remember. Wow. Anyway, he was in his first, let's say his first big singles match at WrestleMania, since I'm drawing a blank at the moment on what he may have done at 31. And this was a big deal to him. And he was coming up with all of these ideas. He's in there with a big box office guy like Brock Lesnar. He had a vision for that match to be what he called the craziest thing imaginable. And he was trying to pitch everything to everybody. He said, I put so much effort in and so much work in, and the other people did too, and I was met with laziness. He said Brock Lesnar just didn't want to do anything. That's what he said. So he was putting Brock on blast here, and I thought that was really disappointing to hear. I know Brock doesn't care about wrestling. He does it for the money. And, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to make the same amount of money whether he takes, you know, some crazy-ass bumps or if he just suplexes his opponent around for 15 minutes and calls it a day. He's making the same amount of money no matter what. But I know, you know, Brock's still got it in him. I remember the Brock Lesnar from 10 years ago, or actually by now it's like 13, 14 years ago. And you don't just forget that stuff. You know, physically he's in great shape. He's still a great wrestler. That was his bread and butter, you know, collegiate and all that stuff. I know he's got it in him. He had the match of the year with CM Punk at SummerSlam a few years ago. And I just think it's too bad because, you know, that was one of the matches I was looking forward to the most at WrestleMania. Especially when I initially heard it was going to be Brock and Bray Wyatt. And I like Bray Wyatt, but to me, I have no interest at all in seeing that match. I was hoping against all hope that that was either just a rumor or the plan would fall through, and it did. So I was very happy when they changed and they made it not just the match between Brock and Ambrose, but wasn't it, I think the stip was maybe no holds barred or no DQ or something. I'm like, man, this could be a hell of a match. And even just the straight singles match that Brock had the year before with Roman Reigns turned out to be a hell of a match. And the triple threat with Cena and Rollins, you know, what little bit I saw of him with Rollins was really good. And it just did not live up to expectations. Unless you went into it expecting just Suplex City and nothing else. Then I guess in that case, you got what you wanted. But, you know, at the end of the day, he doesn't love it. That's it. I mean, that's just all it is. Brock Lesnar, he doesn't love it. That's the bottom line. Brock Lesnar does not love pro wrestling. He likes it. He tolerates it. He's pretty good at it. But he doesn't love it, and he doesn't need it. So there's no incentive for him to go above and beyond what he thinks he has to do. This, you know, for Dean Ambrose, this is the biggest match of his life. So, of course, he's, you know, he's full of piss, and he's ready to go, and he wants to do all this crazy shit. I'm sure especially because he knows he's losing. I don't know that he necessarily cared that he was losing, but at least if he goes out there and he has a great match, that's all that matters. And to be told, probably you're losing, and we're not going to do anything you want to do, and we're just going to beat you with an F5. Yeah, you know what? I can understand him going out there pissed off that night. Now, Ambrose talked about a few other things. Talked about hating scripted promos. He's much better when you let him just go out there and say what he wants. He even went and cut an impromptu promo on Austin in his... I think he was setting up a match at like the fairgrounds or something, and he talked about Austin's like gimpy knee. I don't know if he used the word gimpy, but he talked about Austin's gimpy knee. It was hilarious because the look on Austin's face when he brought up the knee was just priceless. He did not look too thrilled about that. But, you know, he was just trying to show that in a moment's notice, you know, he can cut a good promo. You just give him the premise, give him the bullet points, and he can run with it. And we've heard this from so many people about scripted promos. This is not, you know, private secret backstage news anymore. We've heard enough people talk about it where we already knew about that. But then came the finish of the interview. And what an uncomfortable finish it was, those last 2 or 3 minutes of this interview. Austin, he did make it very clear he likes Dean Ambrose, but he challenged him. He challenged him to be edgier. He challenged him to push the envelope more. He said he thinks Ambrose has, and this was his exact words. He says, I think you've rested on your laurels a bit. And it was interesting because Dean was kind of sitting back the whole time Austin was talking, kind of sitting back in his chair. And as soon as Austin said that, he sat up. Ambrose sat up in his chair. He had a smile on his face, but you knew he had to be super pissed off about that. And in fact, the first words out of his mouth were, you know, rested on my laurels. I am offended by that. And he talked about how I try to be edgier. I try to push the envelope every single night I go out there. But, you know, he gets met with a lot of resistance, you know, but he said, I do try. This was very uncomfortable to watch. And I think Austin was really in the wrong here. Dean Ambrose is not the guy. He should have been saying this stuff to on television. It should have been Vince McMahon or Triple H, right? Dean Ambrose clearly got blindsided by that comment. He's the WWE champion. He got blindsided by that comment live on television in front of the world. You don't put the world champ on blast like that. You just, you know, I mean, pull the guy aside off camera when the interview ends. But this isn't 1998 anymore. You know, sometimes I wish it was. Other times I don't. But it's not 1998 anymore. Austin and those guys, they were able to get away with a lot of shit that these guys today just can't. They can't. Now, I go back to the Joey Styles story that I just got done talking about. We don't know exactly what it was in that Q&A that he said that got him shit-canned. If it was the whole thing, if it was just one line, if it was something he said about Roman Reigns or the Universal title or three-man commentary teams. But we know they took that interview down awfully quick. And he is no longer working for WWE. We know that, right? The guy lost his gig. And that was a Facebook chat. That's where we are today. That's where WWE is today. That a guy could lose his job for something like that. If Steve Austin came through the Performance Center today and he made it to the main roster, he wouldn't be allowed to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. He'd be a watered-down shell of himself. And the minute he steps out of line, right, gives a middle finger, whatever, he's gone. You know, it's like, what do you want the guy to do? I felt so bad for Ambrose there because the guy was put in a no-win situation. I mean, what's he supposed to do? Is he supposed to agree and trash the company on their own network? Because I thought he was pretty open and pretty honest on all the other stuff. And I don't know that Brock Lesnar, you know, the next time Brock Lesnar sees Dean Ambrose, which may well be at SummerSlam, I guess, because you'll have both rosters back there. It could be very interesting. I would love to be a fly on the wall. But then again, Brock probably doesn't even give a shit. Because like I said, he just doesn't care. But on this question, it's like, is he supposed to just go on a rant and trash WWE about how they don't let people go out there and take chances? I mean, what is the guy supposed to do? Or, like he did here, does he say, well, gee, Steve, you know, I try all the time and make himself look like a bitch? I mean, Ambrose just got done telling a story about being pissed off at WrestleMania and pitching all of these wild ideas for his match and being shot down because Brock didn't want to do anything. And you end the interview by saying, you know, hey, push the envelope, kid, you're too comfortable. It's like, can you imagine if the WWE Network existed in 1998 when Austin was the champion and he was being interviewed by Bruno Sammartino? Okay, the old guard talking to the new guard. And Bruno, I don't know if his opinion has changed or not, but he was very critical only a few years ago of Austin. He thought he was vulgar. He was not a fan of all the stuff that Austin did in the Attitude Era. How do you think Austin would feel, okay, sitting there as the champion, if Bruno was sitting across from him and telling him, I challenge you to tone down your language and get more over on your wrestling and don't use shortcuts to get yourself over, right? You've got kids watching the show. You're a role model now. You need to be more responsible. Austin would probably want, and he wouldn't do this, but Austin would probably want to reach across that desk and smack that guy upside the head. He wouldn't be very happy about being called out on TV like that. So I think it was just wrong. You know, I agree with a lot of what Austin says when it comes to wanting the product to be edgier and don't script these guys so much. I agree. But it was wrong for him to say that to Ambrose. You don't think half that locker room wouldn't love to have the freedom to go out there and do and say the things that he did back in the Attitude Era? Half those guys are young enough, they probably grew up watching Austin. Of course they would love to be able to do that, but they can't. You know, Dolph Ziggler just did one of those WWE.com sit-downs with Michael Cole talking about the match with Ambrose coming up at SummerSlam, and Austin's comment clearly bothered him, too. He got a little dig in there at old Stone Cold. He made a comment. He was like, well, you know, it's real easy if you're an Attitude Era guy with a podcast to say, hey, go out there and do what you want, or walk into the boss's office and tell him I demand to do this. But, you know, he tried that, and look at the struggles that Dolph Ziggler has had over the years. You don't think that guy has tried a million different things? Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes left WWE. I know some people still think it's a work. It's not. But, you know, he put that letter out shortly after he left the company. He was very open and very honest about pitching ideas to Vince and pitching ideas to writers and just being met with deaf ears and silence. And he hated the Stardust gimmick. He wanted out of it. He had all these great ideas. And he tried, but I guess he just wasn't a good enough politician. And we hear this countless times from different people. It's not like these guys are just sitting in the back, well, gee golly, you know, oh, hey, I guess there's nothing I can do. I'm sure some people are like that. Some people don't like to be aggressive. Some people don't like confrontation. I don't like confrontation. You know, but if I feel like I'm being wasted or I'm being wronged or something, I don't see anything wrong with, you know, politely going up to somebody and saying, hey, can I talk to you for a second? You don't think these guys do that? I mean, why do you think a lot of these guys are getting so fed up? They're leaving WWE. A guy like a Wade Barrett decides months in advance, you know what, I'm going to leave the biggest company in the world. Why do you think something like that happens? But you know, WWE is a very different company now. It's a weird deal. You know, they're making more money now than they ever have before. Even back when Austin was on top. And yet, they don't feel nearly as hot. It's not hot. Right? You could say business-wise it's hot, sure. But as a fan sitting at home looking at WWE right now, does it feel hot to you? It feels like there's something going on, like bubbling at the surface. They're bringing in these guys, the Cruiserweight Classic. Like, I like that. I dig that. What your average mainstream viewer thinks of the Cruiserweight Classic, I don't know. But does the product overall feel hot? The answer is no. And it hasn't for many years. But when Austin was on top, they didn't have to deal, you know, they didn't have that toy deal with Mattel. They had Jax Pacific. But Mattel, I'm sure it's a much bigger deal for them. Mattel is probably one of, if not the biggest toy company in the world. They've got the deal with Mattel. They make promises to people. They didn't have a relationship back then with GLAAD the way they do now. And they have to walk on eggshells and be careful of what words they use and what they say and what they don't say on TV. You know, guys were hitting each other in the head with chairs. Chair shots to the head every single week, and now if you hit somebody in the head with a chair, you're gone. You'd be fired. It's just a different time. It's like this whole idea of making your own push. I just interviewed Bob Holly, 90 minutes, some real good stuff in there. And one of the things that drives him nuts, and I agree 100%, you know, here's a guy who spent 15 years working for WWE, and we just got done talking about this subject. And, you know, he talks about hearing it from different people in the company. Well, you got to make your own push. You got to grab the brass ring. You got to do this. You got to do that. There is no such thing as making your own push. Not anymore. You saw it with Zack Ryder. You saw it with Damian Sandow and plenty of others. Even if they do notice you and they noticed, look, Ryder got himself noticed for a while. He got a U.S. title out of it. Even if you do get a little bit of traction, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, you're here, and you're not meant to be up here. And at the end of the day, you'll only get over as much as they want you to. That's just how it is. I saw the interview that Triple H did with ESPN. ESPN now has a WWE section on their website. It's so weird. Like, I remember back when I was in high school. So this bleeds into the Attitude Era, the Monday Night Wars, all that stuff. You know, the most exciting period for a wrestling fan, probably ever. Let's be honest here. And I just remember back then, I would have killed for a 24-hour WWE Network. You know, I would have thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And I remember wrestlers. I remember D'Lo Brown, for example. And I don't even know why, but he stands out. He did an interview with someone, and he openly said, you know, one day I wait for that day that pro wrestling is covered on ESPN like all the major sports are. And here we are. You know, they have a 24-hour network with all these different promotions. They're covered on ESPN SportsCenter every week. They have their own section now on the website. It's pretty incredible. I mean, it took 20 years to make it happen, but it's finally happening. Yeah. And so I saw the comments that Triple H made about 50-50 booking. A lot of people wanted me to talk about this because it's something I've mentioned on the show before. Some people didn't even know what that is, what I meant by that. You know, Even Steven, parody book. I mean, there's different names for it. But I'll just read his comments here. It's not that long. He said, when somebody goes, well, you just can't get people over with 50-50 booking, I'll always say, oh, I'm sorry, how's your territory doing? Because this one seems to be doing pretty good over here. We just had our largest WrestleMania in history. People talk a lot of smack about ratings and things, but they don't understand all of the dynamics of everything we do. They don't. They sit on the internet and they read one thing and they give their point of view. I suppose there's a stone somewhere that is where it's written, thou shalt not book 50-50 because it won't lead to success for your promotion. Well, we'll stand on that stone while we are selling out Brooklyn 3 days in a row. End quote. You'll notice he never actually addressed the issue of 50-50 booking in his answer. He talked a lot of smack there. He kind of threw some shade at internet fans, which I find hilarious given that Triple H of all people is the one who is catering to internet fans with NXT and the Cruiserweight Classic and all that kind of stuff that he's doing. So I thought that was funny that he would do that. But he never actually addresses the issue. He talks about it in these broad strokes. Well, WrestleMania just did tremendous. Well, I would certainly expect WrestleMania to be a big success. It's your biggest show of the year. It's WrestleMania. He said people talk smack about ratings without actually addressing the fact that, you know, their flagship show has lost tons of viewers year after year. There is a decline, a very noticeable decline. But I guess we don't know the dynamics about why that's happening. It's a very dynamic thing, you see. I don't think he actually believes any of that. I really don't. I mean, look at NXT. NXT is this guy's baby, right? There's a reason that there has never been a two-time NXT champion or a two-time NXT women's champion. There's been, you know, the Revival, I think, are the first two-time NXT tag champs. But my point is, like on the main roster, Roman Reigns is still a relatively new guy. He hasn't been around that long. How many world titles? He's already been like a 3 or 4 time WWE champion. And in the span, I think, of like 6 months or a year, he won 3 of those belts. And they used to do that all the time in the Attitude Era. You know, Rock and Mankind traded that belt back so many times in a 2 or 3 month span. But, you know, my point is on the main roster, you got a 6 time this and a 10 time that and a 4 time this and a 15 time that. And NXT's only been around a few years, but there's never been a 2-time NXT champion. There's never been a 2-time NXT women's champion. Generally speaking, they do a pretty good job of making people look strong on that show. You don't trade wins back and forth a whole lot. And if anybody should know a thing about being kept strong and how important that is, it's Triple H. And can we throw Stephanie in there too? Right? How many times do people get one over on her? Not too often, right? So the next time you ask yourself, you know, when's the next boom? Why is it taking so long? How come there hasn't been another Stone Cold? Stone Cold didn't play that game back then. That's why. There was none of this, you win one, I win one. You win one, I win one. Just ask The Rock, okay? It took The Rock 5 years to finally beat Austin in a one-on-one match. Although Rock still managed to do pretty well for himself, I would say. But he's The Rock, right? Not everybody can be The Rock. It'd be the middle of the card that it hurts the most. You want to know why WWE ratings aren't what they used to be? Or one of the main reasons, okay? Besides the fact that they're on TV practically every day of the week now. You want to know why? Because who could possibly give a shit about seeing The Miz and Kalisto trade wins back and forth? Who could possibly care about seeing Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin trading wins back and forth from Monday to Thursday, now Monday to Tuesday. And yet, look what happened when they had Ryback running through jobbers every single week for a few months. He got the Goldberg push. And when John Cena went down with that elbow injury, who did they put in his spot against CM Punk inside Hell in a Cell? Ryback. And that pay-per-view did better than people expected. I mean, it didn't, you know, smash records or anything like that. But for a B-show with a new guy in the main event, after pulling John Cena from the match, he did pretty well for himself. Because people were interested in him. He was new. He was a winner. He hadn't been beaten. Yes, believe it or not, wins and losses do still matter. Now imagine if you took a few more guys on the roster, and they don't need to go undefeated. Look, I mean, you can't give everybody a Ryback push or a Goldberg push. I'm not saying that. It's not like, oh, somebody lost the match, he's buried, he's dead. That's not what I'm saying. Take a few more guys. Imagine if you took a few more guys and you gave people a reason to pay attention and get into them. Who knows what might happen, right? But, yeah, let's say a guy like Dolph Ziggler, he won 80% of his matches or 85% of his matches. He only lost seldomly. And you give people a real reason to get into this guy and to pay attention to him. But how many fucking times before the brand split would we see wrestler A beat wrestler B on Raw and then come right back on SmackDown with wrestler B getting his win back over wrestler A? And a lot of times it wouldn't even lead to a pay-per-view match. It could just be a TV program to fill time. This guy wins, then this guy wins, and then they move on. Who does that help? Oh, you know, wow, that sure accomplished a lot. Zack Ryder pinned Sheamus on SmackDown a while back. Clean in the middle with his elbow off the top. I thought for sure Sheamus must have failed the drug test or smacked the Make-A-Wish kid in the face or something. I was that shocked. And then on Raw, what happened? He kicked Ryder in the face and he pinned him in 90 seconds. Oh well. That was that big 3-day push for Zack Ryder. So yes, 50-50 can be a very big problem. I believe it is a big problem because they have a roster. Well, I mean, I guess now they have two rosters, but they have a roster full of people that nobody gives a shit about. And I believe that Triple H is smart enough to know that it's a problem, but he can't do anything about it because he's not the one running the show. And the one show that he does run is the one where you rarely see 50-50 booking. What a coincidence. One more note here. Stephanie McMahon was speaking at a Beyond Sport United event this past week, and according to NBCNews.com, said that WWE is committed to inclusive storytelling for the LGBT community going forward. She said, "We will integrate LGBT characters into our programming, and I do think there will be an opportunity to integrate some of those storylines in the near future." She also said, "We've had GLAAD come in and speak to our entire writing team and give a whole tutorial on sensitivities, the right words, the wrong words, and why those words matter. I think with their guidance and support, we will be able to portray that LGBT storyline appropriately." End quote. Well, given their history, I'm not too sure about that. This is the same company whose idea of a lesbian storyline was hot lesbian action. So I would think, that was so many years ago, I would think with sponsors now and everything, they'll probably be on their best behavior. What'll be interesting to see is, we know Darren Young came out last year. He was pretty public about that. I think it was his choice not to turn it into a storyline or anything because he didn't want it to define who he is. I don't think they've mentioned that once on WWE television, his whole sexual orientation, which is fine with me. I'm not sure why it even matters, to be honest with you, but what'll be interesting to see is there are very likely other people on the roster who are gay. And there's been plenty of gay wrestlers over the years. But does what she just said, does that mean that WWE is going to be scripting talent on TV to play the role of a gay man or a gay woman? You know, or are more wrestlers going to be coming out in real life and they'll use those people? I don't know. I mean, they are actors playing a role on TV. There's nothing stopping them from taking Braun Strowman and turning him into a giant homosexual wrecking machine. What a gimmick that would be. But, you know, it's fine. I mean, so long as they don't shove it down our throats. I mean, they love to pat them... Well, actually, that was a poor choice of words. But they love to pat themselves on the back for stuff like this. Like, oh, hey, look at us. We're doing this. We're doing that. So as long as they don't go overboard with it, I have no problem with that. That's fine. Let's talk about Raw. Raw this past Monday night was live from Anaheim, California. We had exactly 2,000 votes right on the dot for our Instapoll. 29% thumbs up, 71% thumbs down. So we are back to pre-draft numbers. It only took a few weeks. You know, it was a very talk-heavy show. Between the talking and the video packages, they were trying to promote SummerSlam. I get that. But there was so much of it. It just dragged that whole show to a crawl. It was just, they need to go back and study what they did that first week after the brand split. I know you can't replicate that exact show every week, but that show had an energy and an excitement to it that they need to bring to these shows every single week. Maybe the Cruiserweights will help with that. I hope they do. But that entire first hour was just a total snoozer. By the end, though, one of the positives was that they actually got some momentum behind Cesaro again. And we've heard this song and dance before. I mean, we have Dolph going to SummerSlam, right? And how many times have we seen him? You kind of dangle the carrot and then you yank it away from the guy. So there is that in the back of your mind, like, oh, it's Cesaro. I know how this story ends. But by the end of the show, the people were definitely behind the guy. It was cool to see. And that was one of the pluses from this show. Some other bright spots, Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho as a team. It may only be until SummerSlam, but those two together are gold. They're wrestling Enzo and Kaz at SummerSlam. I only wish we had a couple more heel Canadians on that roster so we can get a faction going. And I was thinking about that. You know, it's like, isn't Ty Dillinger Canadian? Right? Wasn't he born in Canada? Owens just put him over big time in an interview. I haven't seen him on NXT television now for, I don't know, at least a month. So I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know what the deal is with him. Why not bring him up to Raw? Put him with these two guys. Yeah, I'd say Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn's the other Canadian on that Raw roster, but that wouldn't make much sense now, would it? Puff Daddy was limited to one backstage segment with The New Day and Mick Foley, so I consider that to be a plus. They sent Seth Rollins out there at the top of the 9 p.m. hour for a promo. And my God, am I over these heel Seth Rollins promos. The only good thing about it was when he was talking about what the name Finn Balor means in Irish mythology, which is Irish warrior and demon king. He made a crack about how, well, I would like to be called Rambo Apocalypse. Well, Rambo Apocalypse totally sounds like a PayPal nickname that I would give to him if he ever donated to my show, which he's more than welcome to do, by the way, for $10 or more. Seth Rollins wants the name, he can have it. But the rest of this was just painful. I mean, they did have a pretty cool video later in the show with Balor talking over this spooky music. He was explaining all sorts of Irish mythology, kind of the way that I did on this podcast when he first got the Finn Balor name. The stuff with the evil eye that opens up and how it kills everyone. I talked about that here on The Sound Off years ago, if you want to go back and listen to all that stuff. But I was thinking about their match at SummerSlam, and I wanted to run this by you guys. I know. I should probably just save this for the pay-per-view predictions next weekend, but what the hell. I came up with a great idea for a spot in the Rollins-Balor match at SummerSlam. Just a spot, a move. Really, I've never seen this in a Finn Balor match before. I mean, it's possible that it's happened maybe when he was Prince Devitt in Japan, although I don't think they do too many ref bumps over in New Japan. But my idea was this. It's the final minutes of the match. Balor has that overhead kick, the Pele kick that he does. Okay, he goes for the Pele kick, but he, you know, Rollins pulls the referee in the way, and Balor kicks the ref in the head with it instead. And I don't know why. I just think I just love that spot. Like, I'm visualizing that in my head, and I love that. Now, I still would much prefer that the Demon does not lose his first match on the main roster. And I would prefer for that reason they end up doing a double turn. And I know some people think that that's crazy. It's the Demon. How can you turn the Demon heel? You can turn the Demon heel. I would prefer they do the double turn, put the belt on Balor, have Anderson and Gallows help him win, form the Balor Club, let those guys share in the talking each week with him. I think it would be the best thing for Finn. And you let Rollins chase as a babyface. And, you know, I look back on it now. And hindsight is what it is. It was a huge mistake not bringing Seth Rollins back from that injury as a babyface. I think they wasted a lot of potential there, but there's still money to be made with Seth Rollins as the babyface going for revenge. The other cool thing about forming a new club with Balor, if they do that, you build to a Raw versus SmackDown match at WrestleMania next year, if they can restrain themselves and wait that long, and you do Balor against AJ Styles, right? I love that idea. But, that ref spot that I just pitched, okay, that could be used the other way, too. Let's say they don't want to turn Balor heel. Let's see, you're one of these people who says, Solomonster, you're crazy, this is the demon, it's his first appearance, how are you going to turn this guy heel? Let's not do that, okay? You want to go in the opposite direction. Or maybe you're one of these people that just thinks it's too early to put the title on Balor. Well, how about this? Balor goes for the Pele kick. Rollins pulls the ref in the way. Balor can't see anything. He kicks the ref in the head. The referee is out. Rollins goes for a pedigree. Balor backdrops him. Then he hits him with the sling blade. Hits him with the drop kick in the corner. He goes up top. He hits the coup de grace. He goes for the pin. He gets the visual pin, but there's no referee. All of a sudden, out come Anderson and Gallows. All the people in the crowd that know their history, and believe me, there will be plenty of those people in Brooklyn who are very familiar with the Bullet Club. Half of them will probably be wearing Bullet Club t-shirts. And they go nuts because they figure, well, they must be coming out to help Finn. But then comes the swerve. And instead, they attack Balor. They lay him out with the Magic Killer. Rollins is revived. He hits the pedigree. The referee wakes up, and he counts the pin. So Seth Rollins becomes the first ever Universal Champion, and he forms an alliance with Anderson and Gallows. And you can call it whatever you want. Hopefully they come up with something better than just the club. You can go in that direction as well. And then Balor can chase. Or Roman can chase Rollins again, because you know he's going to be back in that title hunt real soon. Okay, I'm sorry, all the people that do hate Roman Reigns, and I'm not one of them, I don't hate him, but a lot of people do. If you think that just because he's middling around now in the U.S. title picture that you're free and clear of Roman challenging for the belt, you know, before this year is over, you're out of your mind. He will be back very soon. But that idea could work also. And at least if the demon has to lose, because I think it's crazy for him to get painted up as the demon and then get beaten, but if he has to, at least there it's because it took three people to beat him instead of one. And at WrestleMania next year, Raw versus SmackDown, you could build to a Seth Rollins match against AJ Styles instead of Balor and AJ. I mean, me personally, I like the Balor turn more and the eventual Balor-AJ match, but Rollins and Styles would be a fucking awesome match too. You can't go wrong. Both ideas can work. But if you give me the keys to the kingdom and say pick one, I put the title on Finn, I go with the Balor Club idea, and I turn Seth. But use that Pele kick spot. I think that would be cool. Cesaro beat Sheamus for the second week in a row. So a rare case of them not doing 50-50 booking. Guy beat the same person 2 weeks in a row. What a concept. This would not be the last of Cesaro that we would see on this show. I enjoyed the Orton-Lesnar video package for SummerSlam, especially seeing the OVW stuff. I don't know why they have OVW. They have the library, but they have none of it up yet on the network. I mean, they own all the footage as far as I know. I like Brock's line in here about Randy being a star, but I'm a superstar. It's so true. It's so true. Brock was a star in WWE, but he didn't become a superstar until he left. Same thing with Del Rio. And now Del Rio is back to just being another star on the roster. But for a while there, that guy was a superstar. Michael Cole, have to give him props. He actually acknowledged, well, whoever told him to say it, but WWE actually acknowledged Demolition as being the tag team champions for 478 days. World tag team champions. So I guess that's how they're going to distinguish them from the New Day. New Day are the longest reigning WWE tag team champions. I was just shocked to hear a Demolition reference on Raw with that lawsuit still pending. Rusev and Lana. Rusev and Lana were recently married. They had a celebration of love here in the ring. Wedding cakes. And as soon as you see cakes in a wrestling ring, you know it's bad news. Lana was wearing her wedding dress. Rusev was wearing a vest with no shirt. And with the heat that we've been having here in New York, that may be what I wear to the office tomorrow. Although I don't know if I could pull it off as well as Rusev did here, but they showed a slideshow of all their wedding photos. So long did this segment go and drag out that the crowd began to chant, "Boring." And then I figured out what they were trying to do, which was they were trying to bore us to death so that the crowd would cheer for Roman Reigns to save the day. And cheer they did. His music hit. He got a big pop. It worked like a charm for all of 3 minutes. And then you heard the boos start to mix in again with the cheers. But I thought this was Roman's best segment in a while. You know, he said, I came out here to be the best man. You know, because he's not a bad guy. He's not a good guy. He's the best guy. See, the one time that he could have actually used that line and gotten a pop out of me with it, and he doesn't use it, I guess because he's not the champ anymore. So he's not the guy. Now he's just a guy. Reigns said he wants a U.S. title match at SummerSlam. Rusev said no. So Roman insulted Lana. He called her a mail-order bride. And he's had a line in here about how Rusev disappoints him the way that he disappoints his wife. And that got a big reaction. So somewhere in here, Rusev accidentally bumped Lana into the cake. And Reigns left. I thought Roman was pretty damn good here. But I just thought this whole thing went way too long. Sasha Banks beat Dana Brooke in a match where if Sasha won, Dana would be banned from ringside at SummerSlam. But if Dana won, Sasha would have to defend her title at SummerSlam in a handicap match against Charlotte and Dana. Now, earlier in the show, Sasha went to Mick Foley. And she said, you know, I'm tired of Dana interfering in my matches. I'm tired of her interfering in my business. I want the match at SummerSlam to be a handicap match. That's what she said. It was Mick Foley who talked some sense into her by giving her the option of beating her in a match to make it a fair fight. And only if she lost would it then be a handicap match. Sasha came off like a total moron here. Because why would she request a two-on-one match for her title? Instead of just asking Mick Foley, right? The reasonable, fan-friendly fellow that he is, to do the right thing and just ban this woman from ringside to begin with. Because I guess that would just make too much sense. So that was dumb. And then we had this match. And I'm sorry. Dana Brooke sucks. She just does. She's got personality. Maybe one day she'll put all the pieces together. But when that bell rings, she is a fucking train wreck. She never should have left NXT. That's what NXT is there for, to help people like her improve. I would just, you know, she's going to be banned, I guess, anyway, at SummerSlam. But you know she'll probably try to come out. Maybe they could do an angle or an injury angle. They don't even have to do an injury angle. You know, if we assume Charlotte is losing at SummerSlam, let's say that Dana does somehow try to get involved but fails. You know, all Charlotte has to do on Raw the next night is fire her. That's it. That, you don't even have to think of ideas. Charlotte comes out on TV the next night in Brooklyn and says, you're fired, get the hell out of here. Just like she did with her father. Because she's a bitch and she's a great heel. And that's all you need to do to get Dana back down to NXT. It's very simple. Daniel Bryan appeared on this show at the invitation of Mick Foley. Foley apologized for Brock Lesnar showing up on SmackDown. Bryan apologized for Orton showing up on Raw. They all hugged and sang Kumbaya. And then Foley dropped the shtick and he showed footage of Bryan making fun of the Universal title name. Rusev came out. He said he's the only real champion on Raw. And then Cesaro came out. He said, I've now beaten Sheamus 2 weeks in a row. I deserve a U.S. title match. Foley agreed. They had a match. Which Rusev won after Sheamus interfered. These people badly wanted to see Cesaro win that title. At, you know, down the stretch as the match went on, you would think, man, Cesaro and Rusev is your Raw main event, but the people got into this thing. And Reigns ran down after the match. He speared Rusev in the aisle, but not before Rusev spotted him a little too early. Poor guy had to stand there frozen like a moron waiting for Roman just to make his way down and spear him dead. You shave an hour off this show and get rid of some of the talking segments, and it really isn't a bad show. Now, they did announce, so get ready. They are in Corpus Christi tomorrow night. I mentioned Corpus Christi on the podcast last week. I don't remember in what context, but I had no idea they were coming back there this week, and now I can't help but feel like I may have jinxed it, so I apologize. For those who have no idea what I'm talking about, Corpus Christi, Texas is notoriously a terrible crowd. There's just some cities, you know, across the country that most of the time are just fucking terrible. For example, when they were still going there, now they're renovating it, but the Nassau Coliseum right here in New York, I've been to plenty of shows at the Nassau Coliseum. And the Nassau Coliseum crowd, generally speaking, sucked to the point where I was at a Raw taping in 2001 when Paul Heyman was doing commentary with JR. And during one of the commercial breaks, he must have been told something. Heyman got up from the announce booth. He grabbed the house mic. He stood on the ring steps, and he berated us as the worst crowd he had ever seen in his life. That's how bad of a crowd we were that night. Corpus Christi, you know, no offense to anybody who lives there, but they probably would agree with me. It's just, for whatever reason, one of the worst cities in the country when it comes to TV. And yet WWE goes back there all the time. I just don't get it. I mean, do they sell out? Is that what it is? Maybe it's just an automatic sellout for them. So, hey, we're going to sell tickets anyway. Who cares? That's the only possible explanation for it. I don't know why they keep rewarding them and going back there. So that's where they'll be on Monday night. One funny note before we talk about SmackDown. Nia Jax was not on Raw this week, but WWE released a new t-shirt for her. You know how her theme song talks about how she... And people, I can't tell you after that Billy Gunn theme song thing I did in the mailbag a few weeks ago. Everybody's sending me emails now. They want me to read lyrics. Just read lyrics to like wrestling songs on the show because they find it entertaining. I'm not going to read lyrics to her whole song, but in her theme song, she talks about how she's, you know, not like most girls, right? That's the lyrics. I'm not like most girls, right? Now, her new t-shirt says that on the front. It says, I'm not like most girls. Well, the shirt is not just for women. The shirt is for men. And if you look at the male version of the shirt, it said, I'm not like most girls on the front, which has to be among the dumbest shirts they've ever put out, at least for men. For women, it makes sense. For men, it makes no sense. One of the dumbest things I've seen. That and the Daniel Bryan rape shirt, okay, that said no, 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 and stop it on the back. Two of the dumbest, or here's another one, the APA, always pound an ass. Remember that shirt? Oh, yeah, that was one of those great Attitude Era shirts. I mean, if you're a guy, I don't know why you would wear a shirt that says, I'm not like most girls on the front. I sure fucking hope not. I sure fucking hope you're not like most girls. You would think it would be obvious. Well, anyway, they must have realized how stupid it was because they changed it. And their big change, and this is, I just found this hilarious. Their big change was they simply dropped the word girls. So now the front of the shirt says, I'm not like most. Well played, WWE Shop. Well played. SmackDown Live. They did the reluctant partners deal with Ambrose and Ziggler to build to their match at SummerSlam. They wrestled the Wyatt family, and they won. But because Ziggler had accidentally super-kicked Ambrose at the top of the show, Ambrose got him back after the match with Dirty Deeds, which earned a yes chant from the arena. So, poor Dolph. It's like once the boy cries wolf for the 40th time, I guess people just lose interest and don't care anymore. American Alpha won another squash match. I like what they're doing so far. I mean, it's only been 2 weeks. But they're getting American Alpha over with these little exhibitions here. They had all the other teams in the tag team division walk out to watch this match. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this super impressive list of teams here in the SmackDown division? We have the Ascension, the Vaudevillains, and the Hype Bros. Jimmy Uso is out for a few weeks with a knee injury. So we do still have the Usos. I think the Usos and American Alpha could have some great matches. And really, they are the best possible opponents for them. But my God, the state of this SmackDown Tag Team division, just looking at this. But they won their match. It degenerated into a brawl afterwards with all four teams, and American Alpha cleaned house. So it was the right thing to do. It's just, oof, that Tag Team division needs some work. Becky Lynch and Eva Marie never got started because Eva had a wardrobe malfunction. She had to run to the back. So they are, in fact, going with the angle of her finding ways not to wrestle each week, which I think is genius. I especially loved how all week on her social media accounts after her ankle injury the week before, she started using the hashtag PrayForEva. I thought that was awesome. As long as she doesn't wrestle, I have no problem with her. Although she is claiming that she is going to finally wrestle this week coming up. Alexa Bliss ended up coming out in her place. She beat Becky with Twisted Bliss, so that's her first win on SmackDown. Carmella also was on the show. She beat Natalya by submission in her first match. And then the main event, which I already mentioned. Ambrose and Ziggler got the win. Ambrose laid him out after the match, got a yes chant for it, and that was SmackDown. So, Raw versus SmackDown, week three. I mean, there's other stuff on SmackDown. You know, Rhino wrestled Heath Slater and beat him, so Heath didn't get a contract. I mean, the reason I leave all this other stuff out, I'm not here to do a match-by-match, segment-by-segment review. I'm just not going to do it. Unless the show is just so fucking great and every segment is so important I have to talk about it. I talk about the stuff that matters. And the rest of the stuff you've already seen. And if you didn't see it, it doesn't matter. It's not that important. So that's why I cut some of that stuff out. But Raw versus SmackDown Week 3, SmackDown was a better show. Not by much. It was just easier to watch. But I would say neither show was exciting. I give SmackDown a golf clap win this week as opposed to a standing ovation. So I guess that puts SmackDown up 2-1 over Raw so far.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
I've got some exclusive news to share here. At least I think it is. I haven't seen this reported anywhere else. Someone who I consider to be trustworthy informed me that Shawn Michaels recently moved his family to Orlando. I don't know if it's a permanent move or just a temporary thing. And he has taken over the class that Terry Taylor had been teaching previously at the Performance Center. Don't know the name of the class. Apparently it has something to do with how to conduct yourself as a top star, a top player in the company. And I'm not sure if it has anything to do with promos or anything like that. Only that Terry Taylor was teaching it, and now apparently it is Shawn Michaels. So that's what I was told. And if that's the case, who better to teach you how to be a top player than somebody who was actually a top player? So makes sense. NXT this week, there was a contract signing with Bayley and Asuka. And I will say that I thought this was Bayley's best work on the microphone probably ever in NXT. She had a fire and an intensity about her. At one point, Asuka went to shake her hand, and instead of shaking it, Bayley got up in her face, told her to sign the contract. Asuka was hilarious here because as soon as Bayley starts telling her off, Asuka's like, okay, okay, okay. And then she signs the contract and walks off. This is going to be a good match. That match they had in Dallas, it was weird because of the crowd reaction. And I just feel like, especially coming off that Nakamura-Sami Zayn match, I'm sure that didn't help. But just the crowd didn't seem fully invested in it. The finish came out of nowhere. I feel like they didn't react the way they were hoping they would. Here in Brooklyn, it's a year after Bayley had that big match with Sasha. I think the crowd's going to be totally into this, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. The Authors of Pain won a quick squash match. TM61 ran in afterwards to save the jobbers, who they were about to kill. But they got laid out pretty quickly. We still have not heard anything about these guys from Paul Ellering. He has not said a word. It's been 2 months now, by the way. Andrade Cien Almas beat the Baker, Angelo Dawkins. Almas, I don't know. He just doesn't do it for me. He just doesn't. He wasn't doing it for the crowd either, based on the reaction he got here or didn't get. I think part of the problem is he's a great wrestler. I don't doubt that. And I know people talked about La Sombra, all these great matches he had in Mexico and Japan. Part of the problem is we have yet to see anything from him that makes him stand out from anybody else on NXT. And you have this Cruiserweight Classic. It's not helping his cause because we get to see some amazingly talented guys in that tournament every single week. And when we see him here, I'm just waiting for something special. And I haven't seen it yet. But Almas won. Bobby Roode and his awesome theme music graced us with their presence. He announces that the two of them are going to be in a match in Brooklyn at TakeOver. And he spoke very slowly since he said he figured Almas probably doesn't understand English. Backstage, Austin Aries lobbied for a match at TakeOver, very upset he was not on the card, and so Regal obliged and put him in a match with No Way Jose. Billy Kay beat Liv Morgan. I like Liv. I think she's improving a little bit each time I see her. I heard that she is apparently dating Enzo Amore. I don't know if that's a well-known thing or not, but they're both from New Jersey, so, look, I don't hold it against them. It's not their fault. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa beat Tucker Knight and Patrick Clark, once again wearing his patriotic American Eagle tights. Gargano and Ciampa won with the double kick to Tucker Knight, and they will get their tag team title match against the Revival in Brooklyn, which could absolutely, and probably will, steal the show. If all these house show reports I've been reading about their recent matches are any indication, these guys are going to tear it up. Samoa Joe choked out Mojo Rawley in the main event. Joe was screaming for Nakamura like a madman. He put Mojo back in the choke when Nakamura's music hit, out he came. Unfortunately, so did security, who ran to the ring for Nakamura's own protection. They ran down to restrain Joe because they knew that Joe would murder this man. And Nakamura just taunted him. He got in the ring, and Joe couldn't do anything about it. He even he did the thing that I used to do with my little nephew, where you kind of steal the kid's nose. It's too bad nobody played that game with Triple H when he was a kid, but he actually did that here to Samoa Joe, and Joe is just going to murder this guy. I still think that we're getting a new champion in Brooklyn, but he is maybe on TV this week. He is going to murder Nakamura. Now, we have one more show before TakeOver, one more TV show, and I am going to be doing the podcast on Saturday next weekend, and I'll share some details on that at the end of this week's show, but I'm doing the show before TakeOver, but I say, you know what, let's do predictions now anyway, because once that show gets out next Saturday, it's probably only going to be a few hours before TakeOver, and I don't want to leave predictions for the very last minute, so let's do them here. We'll run down the card. We have the debut of Ember Moon, who I've also heard great things about. Here's a woman who got a standing ovation after her house show match with Asuka last week, so I've got high hopes for her. I've never seen her work, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure she'll win. If you need a prediction on that, I think it's safe to say she'll win in her debut. Austin Aries takes on No Way Jose. I think it could go either way. You know, if these guys are going to have a program, it's fine having Aries win the first match, as long as, you know, Jose's the new guy they're trying to get over. And so as long as in the end he gets over, that's all that matters. But I feel like Jose's going to win. It might be one of those roll-up, slip-on-a-banana-peel type finishes, or who knows, maybe Austin walks out and the guy wins by count out, but however he wins, I feel like Jose's winning this match. Bobby Roode against Andrade Cien Almas, who I believe is undefeated, as No Way Jose is. And I think that undefeated streak here comes to an end. I think Bobby Roode, this is his first match. So how could Bobby Roode in that great fucking theme song, how could he lose here in Brooklyn? He's got to win. So I'm going to pick Bobby Roode. We have the Revival defending the tag team titles against Gargano and Ciampa, which I think is going to steal the show. And I'm picking the Revival. I think the Revival are going to retain. I know they've been talking up, you know, we beat you, we beat the Revival, and that's why they're getting their title shot. And it's funny, that whole thing about 50-50 booking earlier. So you would think in NXT, even though Gargano and Ciampa beat them the first time, they could beat them the second time too. But I feel like they're going to want to keep this going a little bit longer. Maybe they figure people probably figure we're getting a title change. I don't know. I like the Revival, so if they win, hey, it's no skin off my back. I don't mind. I wouldn't mind these guys feuding for another few months. So I'm going to pick the Revival here. I think they're going to retain the belts. We have Asuka against Bayley for the Women's Championship. I'm going with Asuka just because I think Bayley's coming up to the main roster. It was many, many months ago on this podcast that the way I pitched it for Bayley to come up was the night after SummerSlam in that same building in Brooklyn. I didn't know at the time there would be a brand split. That's how far back I first predicted this. So that might change things. Maybe Bayley, you know, maybe it makes more sense for her to be on SmackDown. SmackDown looks like it could use all the help it could get, but I just love the idea of her coming out on Raw the night after SummerSlam and going face to face with Sasha. And again, they also teamed recently. Now they're all buddy-buddy, so they can't, it wouldn't be exactly as I envisioned it being all those months ago. But you give people a little teaser for what they could expect at WrestleMania. Because I do think the championship match at WrestleMania, or I guess if they have two women's titles, one of them will be Sasha and Bayley. I think that's the match to do in Orlando next year. Orlando, where both of them got over in NXT. It's the perfect place for it. So I just think whether it's Raw the night after or September, she's coming up very, very soon. There's no need for her to win. I mean, she's got nothing else to prove. I mean, what would be accomplished by putting the title back on her? You know, it doesn't make sense. Unless you just want the big feel-good moment. You could do that. You could get the big feel-good moment. We already had it, though. We got the big feel-good moment for her in that same building a year ago. You don't have to do it 2 years in a row. I'm picking Asuka here. And in the main event, Samoa Joe defending the NXT Championship against Shinsuke Nakamura. We didn't get a title change in Brooklyn, a world title change, or not world, but an NXT title change. We didn't get an NXT title change last year in Brooklyn. Balor beat Owens to retain. I do think this year we're getting a title change. And Joe's another one who could come up to the main roster tomorrow. and probably, and not even probably, he should already be there. But I don't know when he'll actually be coming up. I can see him and Nakamura having one more takeover match after this. Maybe that would be Joe's swan song. Maybe he could debut in the Royal Rumble or something. But I think Nakamura wins. I think he remains undefeated. I think it's going to be a huge explosion in Brooklyn when he does. And I think we're going to have a new champion. So I'm picking Nakamura. So those are my takeover predictions for next weekend. Let's slide on over here to my new favorite show. At least until Lucha Underground comes back next month, which is the Cruiserweight Classic. This was episode 5. These shows just keep getting better and better. This was the best one yet. Only had 2 matches. We had Grand Metalik against Tajiri. I thought these two had great chemistry. I thought they had a really, really good match. And Metalik won with the Michinoku driver, so he advances. We also had Kota Ibushi against Cedric Alexander. This was an outstanding match. This was a total star-making performance for Cedric Alexander. The whole match was great, but that's, I got to talk about that sequence towards the end. Yeah, a lot of these cruiserweight matches, and you see this in like indie matches and stuff all the time, all the near falls, right? You think the match is over and it just keeps going. And half the time, or more than half the time, it's like they overstay their welcome. Like, you know, the match really should have ended there, but it doesn't. It just keeps going. We do tend to see a lot of that, but there was this great sequence here where Kota Ibushi's finishing move, I think they call it the Golden Star Powerbomb. It's the last ride. It's Undertaker's last ride powerbomb. Actually, that's not even completely accurate, because the way Kota Ibushi does it, it's basically the Undertaker's last ride into a sit-out powerbomb. Undertaker's powerbomb was not a sit-out powerbomb. The other guy was laid down on the mat. The Undertaker was still standing when the move was over. So it's a little bit different. But he went for that move. Alexander got out of it. I think there might have been some kicks, there might have been some moves. Anyway, he hit a brutal brainbuster on Kota Ibushi, dropped him right on the back of his surgically repaired neck, and he went for the pin. Now, I didn't think this was the finish because, I mean, come on, how can you eliminate Kota Ibushi at this point from this tournament? It is possible he won't win. I picked him to win. Now I'm hearing that he hasn't signed a contract. He's going to be on like a part-time deal until he does sign a contract, and that makes me think that, look, if he's not signed to a full-time deal, why have him win the Cruiserweight Classic? So maybe he won't. But I didn't expect him to be eliminated this early. So I didn't really buy into the near fall, but it was still a good near fall. What was so great about this was, as soon as Ibushi kicked out, Alexander did not waste a second. He immediately got back up. He kicked Ibushi in the fucking head. Just walloped him with a kick to the head. And the place went nuts, and at that point, I will say, for a split second there, kind of like at WrestleMania 25, there was a point in that match, there was a split second where they got me, and it actually might have been on the Shawn Michaels super kick late in the match to The Undertaker. They got me here. I was like, holy shit, Alexander's going to win this match. And the referee held up his count a little bit. He did. He held it up a little bit. But Ibushi kicked out, and the place went nuts. And Alexander couldn't believe it. He was in tears. He couldn't believe this guy kicked out. I thought that whole sequence of near falls there was so fucking awesome. And in the end, Ibushi did hit the powerbomb. He did get the pin. But just a total star-making. I mean, he was already a star. Alexander, though, this was a total star-making performance for him. I mean, who would have thought 6 months ago? At this point in 2016, Cedric Alexander, with Kota Ibushi, no less, would have the match of the year in WWE. It's crazy. Crazy times, I tell you. And as great as this match was, the match itself, the last 30 seconds of this episode were just the best. Cedric is in tears, like legit tears, just crying, getting a standing ovation from the crowd. He's soaking it all in. He's getting chants now of, please sign Cedric, please sign Cedric, which they would be crazy not to do. And suddenly out comes Triple H with a look on his face like, okay, we can do that. And he puts his arm around Cedric as if to say, let's go to the back and talk some business. He flashes a thumbs up to the crowd and the fans break into a chant of yes. A yes chant as they go off the air. Fucking awesome, awesome moment. Now, I saw some people were thinking, well, maybe Triple H came out because Cedric was just taking too long to go to the back. And that was kind of his cue to, hey, you know, come to the back. I did read somewhere that at the tapings, I think Alexander did go to the back and they sent him back out. I don't know if that's true. I read that in like, there was a tweet in a website, I think, where I saw that, but I don't know if that's true. It doesn't matter. Either way, I didn't see it that way at all. I don't think that's what happened at all. And nor would this have made air, I don't think, with the please sign Cedric chance if they didn't want to sign Cedric. So let's not try to ruin what was a really cool moment. I don't think it was that at all. Those last 30 seconds were great. Really, the entire 60 minutes was great. The best 60 minutes of television in WWE all year. There's a reason why this Cruiserweight Classic is consistently the... It was in the Observer. They have each week like the top 15 shows on the WWE Network for that. I think for the week or for the month. And the Cruiserweight Classic is consistently the first or second most watched show each week on the network since the show debuted. There's a reason for that. Because it's awesome. People want to see action. They want to see the high flyers. They want to see, you know, things like this. It's such a great story. I mean, you get done watching this match and you want this guy so badly to have a contract. And then you get that big payoff in the end. And it's just great. It's great storytelling. Also, Mike Johnson over at PWInsider.com had this note. He said, there will be a Cruiserweight Championship on Raw at some point after the Cruiserweight matches start up on that show, which will probably be sometime in September. Nobody seems to know for sure. But it would make sense if they wait until the tournament is over and then maybe that next week debut everybody on Raw. But they are working on a belt, and apparently WWE is having medals made for the finalists of the Cruiserweight Classic. So I don't know if the winner of the tournament is going to be the champion or if the winner of the tournament is going to get like a gold medal and the runner-up gets a silver, and then they're just going to have another tournament to crown a champion on Raw. None of this has been explained. Nobody seems to know. But, you know, it sounds like a cool concept. I could see Cody and Bushi standing on that top pedestal with Zack Sabre Jr. head in his hands and tears on the lower tier. I could see that. TNA. Haven't talked about TNA in a while. There's really been no news, and all of a sudden there was kind of a little explosion in news this week. The biggest being that Billy Corgan is now president. He is president of the parent company, which is, I guess, called Impact Ventures. I guess, is that supposed to be like what Titan Sports used to be, I guess, for WWF? He is now the president. Dixie Carter is now the chairman. And she is no longer making day-to-day decisions the way she was before. That will now be Billy Corgan. They put a press release out. I'll just read part of it here. It says, Impact Ventures, the parent company of TNA Wrestling and Impact Wrestling. And by the way, what's the fucking difference between TNA Wrestling and Impact Wrestling? They got to clear that shit up, because that's very confusing. It's like there's two promotions. There is no two promotions. There's one. Anyway, today announced the appointment of Billy Corgan as its new president. Current president Dixie Carter becomes chairman and chief strategy officer. As president, Billy Corgan will be responsible for leading day-to-day operations for Impact and its affiliated brands. As chairman, Carter will focus on long-term planning, strategic partnerships, and global growth. In working with Billy over the last 16 months, he has impressed me to the point that I have been in discussions with him to take on an elevated strategic leadership role within the company. The more we discussed our vision for the promotion, the clearer it became that position needed to match his commitment. So, this is what people have been waiting for a long time. Dixie Carter is out of, you know, she's not out of power. I think that would just be wrong. She's out of the position she was in before. And that alone makes this an improvement. I don't know what kind of leader Billy Corgan is going to be. I know he's got some experience running a wrestling promotion before, which, you know, Resistance Pro, that was his promotion. He started it in 2011. It's still a promotion to this day. I don't think he's affiliated with it any longer. So he's got, hey, he's got some experience doing it. I don't know how things were with Resistance Pro. I don't know what he will be like as a leader. Hopefully it can't be any worse than Dixie. But the thing is, Dixie's still there. So I'm happy for them. I hope it leads to some great changes. People have said that overall the Impact product over the last 6 months or a year is so much better than it was, and maybe Billy had something to do with that. Maybe this was a trial run for him, and now they just made it official. And if that's the case, good for him, and good for all the TNA fans. But I still, you know, she's still there. And that's all I'll say. She's still there, and it's a good thing, but she's still there. And I do wonder exactly what influence she will still have. Now, the other thing is Damian Sandow has signed with TNA. He made his debut on Impact this week. His new name is Aaron Rex. Okay, I know his real name is, I think his real name is Aaron. I don't know where the Rex came from. I think of Tyler Rex when I hear that, but all right, whatever. He's Aaron Rex. I watched the promo. He cut a promo on Impact. I watched it. I thought he did a good job, but I don't know. I mean, how many times have we seen these WWE guys? Drew Galloway is another example, where they come over and it's like they cut the shoot promo on TV. I was overlooked and I was this and I was that, and I'm gonna show them and I'm gonna stick it to them, and he did. Drew Galloway, I think, proved that WWE really dropped the ball on him. EC3 as well. EC3 became one of the biggest success stories of TNA. And I hope the same happens for Damian Sandow. But I think at some point you reach that level where there's some fatigue in hearing these promos. And he didn't really shoot on them like, you know, fuck WWE. But he was making comments, you know, and he had every right to. I'm not even saying, like, if I had Damian Sandow and I was going to debut him on TV, how do you not allude to what you went through in WWE and how now I'm here and things are going to be different? Maybe I'm just getting fatigued of all these types of promos. He did come back out at the end of the show. He was staring at Bobby Lashley from afar, so they were kind of teasing a title match maybe between him and Bobby Lashley at some point. And we'll see what they have in mind for him. You know, I hope he goes on to big things and he can be in that top mix. And who knows, maybe they'll put the title on him at some point. He's not going to make much of a difference for TNA, because look at all the other guys they brought in who didn't make a difference, who were much bigger stars than him. But I do have to say, you know, TNA does have a pattern now of bringing in these ex-WWE guys, these younger guys, and at least giving them a platform that they didn't have or that was taken away from them in WWE. And I cite EC3, I cite Drew Galloway, and I cite Damian Sandow. There's probably been a few others that I'm just not thinking of off the top of my head here. But these are very talented guys who did not hit their full potential in WWE because they were seen in a certain way. And it would be kind of nice for him to have a lot of success and be able to show them and, hey, see what you missed out on here? But it's not like it's, you know, he's not taking TNA to the promised land or anything like that. It's not going to change their business at all. The bigger thing will be Billy Corgan. They have a lot bigger problems than just bringing in a certain wrestler. They've got to change a lot of things in that company. And quite frankly, I would start with the name. Because even though Billy Corgan's in now as the president, they're still TNA. And I think those initials are so poisoned. I just think they need a whole makeover from top to bottom. So hopefully Corgan can do that for them. Lucha Underground, they put a trailer out for season 3. They didn't air it at the end of Ultima Lucha like they did the previous season, but I guess they have it up on YouTube now. I watched it. It's about 2 minutes long. It's very cool. I did spot Sammy Callahan in there, so I know he'll be in season 3. And speaking of people in season 3, this comes per the Honky Tonk Man's official Twitter account. The Honky Tonk Man will be appearing on Season 3 of Lucha Underground. And I got tipped off about this. A certain someone, and you know who you are, tipped me off about this months ago. And as I told this person at the time, I don't know what role they're going to have Honky playing on the show, if it's going to be like a storyline arc, if it's going to be a cameo in one episode. But I want a scene with Honky Tonk Man in a bar in Boyle Heights, playing the guitar while Lorenzo Lamas watches and smokes a cigar. That's what I want to see. Before I get to the mailbag, one thing, I had a lot of people ask me, what do you think of What Culture Pro Wrestling, and how come you haven't talked about it, and all this other stuff? Well, now I have a reason to, because they made an announcement this week, a pretty big announcement. They're going to be having a show over there in the UK October 6th. And they have some big names on there. Kurt Angle's going to be there. Cody Rhodes is going to be there. And Jim Ross, along with Jim Cornette, are going to be calling the show. So, hey, good for them. I don't know where they're getting all this money from, because I'm sure Kurt Angle and JR don't come cheap. So they've got some names on that show, and it's going to be airing as an iPay-per-view. So that's coming up on October 6th, which, as some of you may know, happens to be my birthday, so I will very likely not be watching this, but I know a lot of you are probably going to want to, so you might want to head on over to their website, which I don't have handy at the moment, but I know tickets are available if you're in the UK, if you're in the area and you want to go. It sounds pretty cool, so you can check that out. Let's get to the mailbag. If you have questions, you could always email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. This one comes from Chris in Boynton Beach, Florida. In the WWE 2K17 commercial, Paul Heyman says that Brock Lesnar is the ninth mayor of Suplex City. In no particular order, who would you have as the eight previous mayors? Previous mayors of Suplex City. The first one that comes to mind is Taz. I mean, the guy was called the human suplex machine for a reason. So Taz would be number one that I would think of. Scott Steiner, for sure. Dr. Death, Steve Williams, was a beast. So that's three. Kurt Angle. Got to put Kurt Angle on there. And honestly, I would put Chris Benoit on that list. So that's five. I'd have to think more on who the other three names would be to come up with them. I'll leave that to you guys. I'm sure that'll make for a good discussion point. You can flesh out this list or agree or disagree with these five choices here. And it's still very early in his career, but I have a feeling that Jason Jordan is going to end up on that list someday too. He may be the 10th mayor of Suplex City before all is said and done. Some of the ones I've seen him give in NXT, I mean, that dude is scary strong. And I guess you could say right now he's running for office. He hasn't been elected yet, but I think one day he might be. Amir from Detroit. Since SummerSlam is coming up, I have a question about a certain SummerSlam match in 1991. Why didn't Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior just face off against each other in the main event instead of teaming up against Sergeant Slaughter, the Iron Sheik, and General Adnan? I think it could have been the biggest main event you could do for one of their biggest pay-per-views, so why did they not do it? You know, Vince was so hung up on that Gulf War crap, even though the war had been over for months by that point. I agree. I mean, it was a stupid match. Hogan and Warrior for the title at the Garden, you know, with Hogan getting his win back, would have been much bigger. Warrior ended up getting a title shot at SummerSlam the year after against Randy. I mean, he got fired first, but he came back. He got a title shot against Savage in Wembley the following year. That was a big match. But, I mean, just imagine Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior one-on-one in Madison Square Garden for the championship. And you could still have Sid Justice as the special referee. But, you know, as it turned out, Vince fired the Warrior right after that match anyway. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was for the best. Maybe he figured Warrior would want even more money if he was in that position, fighting for the title. Because remember, in that tag match, Warrior ended up chasing those guys backstage with a chair. And he was never seen again. I mean, he was almost like an afterthought. It was like, we got to get this guy out of here. Hogan won the match, and Hogan was the one who posed with Sid in the end. The Warrior never came back out. So maybe there were problems in the months leading up to the event, you know? And maybe he also didn't want to risk splitting the crowd or having Warrior getting cheered more than Hogan. You know, that's also a very real possibility. But, I mean, these are all just guesses. You would have to ask Vince why he didn't do it. I really think, you know, if Vince McMahon ever wanted to sit down and write a book, first of all, if he's got a good enough memory, he could get like five volumes of books just by answering all these types of questions. I just think it would be fascinating. I'm sure 90% of it would probably be bullshit, but I would still read it. Rob from London. My question is surrounding the big four ex-TNA stars who are now in WWE and NXT. AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Austin Aries, and Bobby Roode. I'm not including Eric Young, as I believe he's only appeared once and has not been seen ever since, which is true. I don't know what's up with him. With regards to those four guys, is it a coincidence that they are all heels? Due to their TNA history, does Vince legitimately view them as the enemy, thus making them heel, which has a negative effect on merchandise sales? Or rather, is it a testament to their abilities that they are all very credible heel performers? Or, of course, is it just a coincidence? I think it's just a coincidence. I don't think Vince knows, cares, or gives a shit about who's face and who's heel in NXT. He probably doesn't even know what Austin Aries is or Bobby Roode or what, you know, alignment they are. He doesn't care. I think it's just a coincidence. I mean, AJ came in as a babyface, and he had a nice run there for a few months, and they wanted to do the club thing. And it was more a case of we got to get Roman Reigns over. AJ's a great performer. He's a guy that we can beat. I don't think it had anything to do with, well, we have to turn him heel because then it'll hurt his t-shirt sales. I think AJ Styles, even as a heel, is probably doing pretty damn good. He's got those gloves that are always selling out on WWE Shop. I think he's doing quite well. And I never understood that. I mean, if he makes more money, if his t-shirts, if his stuff makes more money, the company makes more money. Why would they want to ruin that? I think it's pretty obvious the way he's been positioned that they realize this guy's the real deal. You know, they drafted him like number three or some very high pick in the draft, number three or four. Yeah, that right there to me should tell you everything you need to know about how they feel about AJ Styles, and it's all positive. Spencer from Keswick, Ontario. I'm trying to remember a time when an injury actually helped a career, like the injury caused them to start a new gimmick, or when they came back they were more over than before. I can't think of any, and figures you may know or remember a time that this has ever happened. I can give you two right off the top of my head. Steve Austin and The Rock. You know, when Owen Hart dropped Austin on his head, the timing was terrible because Austin was their next big star on the ascent. But he actually never missed a week of TV. They had to improvise ways for him to get on the show each week and kind of be creative with it. So we ended up getting some pretty fun segments. You know, it even led to the first Vince McMahon stunner in Madison Square Garden. Now, it did shave years off the guy's career. It did rob us of some pretty big WrestleMania matches. But that injury also turned Austin into this like badass hero who came back from being dropped on his head, and it played into the story. Now, with The Rock, if you remember, he was Rocky Maivia, right? Smiling Rocky Maivia. And like now we have smiling Apollo Crews, or Apollo Creed, as Daniel Bryan called him. And he was going absolutely nowhere, and the people hated him. And then he hurt his knee, and he had to get surgery, so he was out for a few months. When he came back, his very first night back, he turned heel, and he joined the Nation. And that was it. They were off to the races. That injury and that time off was probably the best thing that's ever happened to him. The other big one, honestly, I'll give you one more, may have been Shawn Michaels. I think that the path that this guy was going down in 98 was, put it this way, I don't even know if he would be alive today had he not hurt his back, and if he would have stayed on the road full time and kept doing what he was doing behind the scenes. I mean, the guy was in a bad place. And instead, he took 4 years off. He met his future wife. He found Jesus. He came back a new man. He was every bit as popular as he was before. I would even say he was probably more popular than he was before. And look at the second career that he had for himself. Look at the legacy he made for himself with a whole new audience and all these new, younger fans. Look at the matches he had. Look at the feuds he had from 2002 to 2010. So just like with Rocky, I think the injury may have been the best thing that ever happened to him. Cameron from Ackworth, UK. Buy or sell, Lucha Underground Season 1 or Lucha Underground Season 2? Got to buy on Lucha Underground Season 1. I liked them both, but I think Season 1 for sure has the edge over Season 2. Jerry from Long Island, buy or sell on Raw from 2004 to 2005 or SmackDown from 2002 to 2003. I feel like each of these shows were at its best during these years, with SmackDown putting on excellent matches each week with the SmackDown 6 to Brock's heel turn in 2003, whereas Raw had Benoit winning the world title, Orton's face turn, Lita and Trish as the main event, the locker room beating up on Evolution, the Who Will Run Raw feud, oh yeah, that was great, all the way to Batista's rise as the man. Which do you think was better? I'm buying on SmackDown. I'm buying on SmackDown. I'm selling on Raw. I didn't even have to think about that one. I really was not a big fan of Raw during that time. And you know my thoughts on the Triple H Reign of Terror. It wasn't just that. I just really was not that big of a fan of Raw. I thought the Batista stuff was great. That was, I mean, actually 2005 I liked a lot better than 2004. But SmackDown in 2002-03, I mean, that blew Raw out of the water in every possible way. Even the announcing, I'm not going to say JR and King sucked, because they didn't, but I thought Michael Cole and Taz were really good together. So their announcing, I would put that up against JR and King from that particular period any day of the week. SmackDown obviously had better matches. I think it was more of the wrestling show, so to speak. But that doesn't mean it was just nothing but wrestling matches. They had great talent on that show, and they had great storylines, and the in-ring was obviously much better. But again, the guys on the show, I dug them all. You know, SmackDown was the A show. Raw was still the flagship. Raw's always going to be the flagship. But the flagship for those years was the B show. That's it. Now, you know, Raw was live, but that was about the only thing that they had over SmackDown. And I didn't care. Raheem from the Bronx. Buy or sell is the better heel, Triple H or The Rock? Wow, this is a good buy or sell here. This is a tough one. Man. You know, it's so hard because The Rock and Triple H were two totally different types of heels. The Rock, from most of his heel run, was more of an entertaining heel. He was more of like a comedy heel. You know, I shouldn't even use that word. When you watch The Rock, you wanted to watch him because you were thoroughly entertained by the things he said, the things he did, the things he wore, right? And he played off Vince when he was like the corporate champ and all that. Hollywood Rock, I could talk about Hollywood Rock for hours. It was fucking great. But it got a lot of laughs. I don't know that anybody took Hollywood Rock seriously as a heel, as like a big heel threat, even though he did beat Stone Cold at WrestleMania. But that's not what Hollywood Rock or corporate Rock really was. Now, The Rock can be a vicious son of a bitch. You just look at that I Quit match with Mankind at the Rumble in 99. He could be a vicious SOB. He had that in him. But I just think for much of his heel run, it was more of an entertaining heel. Triple H was a lot more of like a throwback to an old school kind of heel, like a Harley Race. I know he's a big Harley Race fan. Ric Flair, although Ric Flair had far more charisma than Triple H, but that's the kind of heel that Triple H was trying to be. And in 2000, 2001, as a heel, there was no one better. But again, two totally different types of heels. So it comes down to, it's a subjective thing. Which kind of heel do you prefer, right? I was entertained as shit by pretty much everything The Rock did. But back then, The Rock, if you took that version of The Rock, corporate or Hollywood, and transplanted him into 2016, and he cut a heel promo and he healed on the fans, you know what would happen? He would get a standing ovation for it. He would get yes chants for calling the fans jabronis. Triple H would... People hated Triple H. I hated Triple H. Now, forget the Reign of Terror and all that. Triple H was somebody that you just wanted to see him get his ass kicked. He was dastardly. He could also be vicious. And he was more of a traditional heel. I prefer that, personally, but it's hard for me to buy or sell one over the other. I buy on Triple H as the better heel, but I buy on The Rock as being the more entertaining heel, if that makes sense. And again, I hope this ends up on tracks, because I think this could end up as a good discussion point. You're going to probably get a lot of people who say Triple H, a lot of people who say The Rock. I just think it's a matter of personal preference. They weren't the same kind of bad guy. They weren't the same kind of villain. Now, if you were to take Triple H and compare him to Roddy Piper and tell me, who do you think was the better heel? Roddy Piper was also very entertaining. He said a lot of very outlandish shit that today would get a lot of laughs. But I think Piper, at his peak as a heel, may have been the best that company's ever had. Second only to Vince McMahon, because I still maintain Vince McMahon is the greatest villain of all time. Piper may well be number two behind him, but Triple H would be right there. You know, they could fight for the second spot, or maybe he would be number three. I would compare him more to a guy like Piper. Rock is just on another level. He's just a completely different kind of... It was almost like he was miscast. Like, people wanted badly to cheer for him, but you know, too bad. I'm a heel, and you're going to hate me. It's like now with Roman Reigns. People want to hate Roman Reigns, but he's being pushed as a babyface. It's like, too bad. He's a babyface. Tough shit. You're going to like him, right? Kind of a similar thing there. And Hollywood Rock only lasted like 3 months. I mean, it was because he left. But think about that. People still talk about Hollywood Rock to this day. It was only 3 months. It went from February to April. You know, he beat Hogan a second time. He beat Austin, and he lost to Goldberg, and he was gone. That was it. Never to be seen again. I wouldn't mind Hollywood Rock coming back. Now, I know I haven't also given an update on my mom in a while. I've had some people email me about that, so I didn't want to forget here. Actually, let me just say this before we wrap up here. You can follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. All the events coming up next weekend, NXT, SummerSlam, Raw, I will be there at the Barclay Center. I'll be live tweeting from all of those shows as long as the connection works in the building. There very likely will be a post-SummerSlam review going up on YouTube the next morning. I probably won't have time to do it that night, but it'll go up that next morning. And you'll want to follow me on there. At Solomonster is the best place to go. We'll have the polls up that you can vote in, thumbs up, thumbs down when the shows are over. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, because if any reviews do go up, you will be alerted, you'll get a notification, you can be the first to listen to it. Because they may or may not be pushing to the feed. In fact, the post-SummerSlam stuff probably won't be going to the feed. So you'll want to go on YouTube for that. I mentioned I'm going to be speaking with Bill Apter. That's the plan this week. On Tuesday, he and I are supposed to speak, and hopefully that'll go up by Wednesday at some point. So there's a lot of really cool stuff coming out. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody next weekend at the meetup on Sunday, a week from today. Noah and I have a studio booked for the Sound Off on Saturday, so the podcast should be going up a day early next weekend. It'll go up Saturday afternoon at some point. We might even be able to stream it live on Mixlr and take phone calls, so no guarantees, but we're working on that. All the more reason to stay tuned on Twitter, and so if we do, I'll put the phone number up there. But I have not given an update recently on my mom, and it's been stressful. It's been a very stressful few weeks, and her tumor markers have been going up, which means that the medicine that she's been on is no longer working, so we need to make a change. Now, thankfully, we haven't exhausted all of our options. I mean, this thing has been working for the last year. We haven't had to make a change yet. This is the first time it's finally, like, not working, and so now we just have to make a change. You know, obviously, I've been just stressed to the max. I mean, forget about my own situation. My stuff just pales in comparison to what she's going through. That's really my primary focus. So I just wanted to give everybody that update. And next weekend, I think, will be a very nice distraction for me for a lot of different reasons. And I look forward to seeing everybody at the KBH at 2 p.m. or at some point. You can drop by whenever you're able to. Between 2 and 6, we should be there, a few blocks away from the Barclay Center. And don't forget to RSVP and our invite. So, until episode 457, which should be up on Saturday, I want to bid you adieu. I will say be well, stay safe, and we got a lot of good stuff coming up next weekend. A lot of fun stuff, so check it out, and we will see you back here again real soon. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solomonster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster Sound Off.